Today, we are going to go through four of the plagues that hit Egypt. So we're going to go to Exodus chapter 7 and 8.
And the Lord said to Moshe, "See, I have made you like God to Pharaoh, and your brother Aaron shall be your prophet. You shall speak all that I command you, and your brother Aaron shall tell Pharaoh to let the people of Israel go out of his hand. But I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and though I multiply my signs and wonders in the land of Mitzrayim, Pharaoh will not listen to you. Then I will lay my hand on Egypt and bring my hosts, my people, the children of Israel, out of the land of Mitzrayim by great acts of judgment. The Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord when I stretch out my hand against Mitzrayim and bring out the people of Israel from among them." Moshe and Aaron did so. They did just as the Lord had commanded them. Now Moshe was 80 years old and Aaron 83 years old when they spoke to Pharaoh. Then the Lord said to Moshe and Aaron, "When Pharaoh says to you, 'Prove yourselves by working a miracle,' then you shall say to Aaron, 'Take your staff and cast it down before Pharaoh, that it may become a serpent.'" So Moshe and Aaron went to Pharaoh and did just as the Lord had commanded. Aaron cast his staff before Pharaoh and his servants, and it became a serpent. Then Pharaoh summoned the wise men and the sorcerers, and they, the magicians of Mitzrayim, also did the same by their secret arts. For each man cast down his staff, and they became serpents. But Aaron's staff swallowed up their staffs. Still, Pharaoh's heart was hardened, and he would not listen to them, as the Lord had said. Then the Lord said to Moshe, "Pharaoh's heart is hardened. He refuses to let the people go. Go to Pharaoh in the morning as he is out to the water. Stand on the bank of the Nile and meet him, and take in your hand the staff that turned into a serpent. And you shall say to him, 'The Lord, the God of the Hebrews, sent me to you, saying, Let my people go, that they may serve me in the wilderness.' But so far you have not obeyed. Thus says the Lord, 'By this you shall know that I am the Lord. Behold, the staff that is in my hand, I will strike the water that is in the Nile, and it shall turn to blood. The fish in the Nile shall die, and the Nile will stink, and the people of Mitzrayim will grow weary of drinking water from the Nile.' The Lord said to Moshe, 'Say to Aaron, take your staff and stretch out your hand over the waters of Mitzrayim, over their rivers, their canals and their ponds, and all their pools of water, so that they may become blood, and there shall be blood throughout all the land of Mitzrayim, even in the vessels of wood and in vessels of stone.' Moshe and Aaron did as the Lord had commanded. In the sight of Pharaoh and in the sight of the servants, he lifted up the staff and struck the water in the Nile, and all the water in the Nile turned into blood. And the fish in the Nile died, and the Nile stank, so that the people of Mitzrayim could not drink the water from the Nile. There was blood throughout all the land of Mitzrayim. But the magicians of Egypt did the same by their secret arts. So Pharaoh's heart remained hardened, and he would not listen to them, as the Lord had said. Pharaoh turned and went into his house, and he did not take this even to heart. And all the people of Mitzrayim dug along the Nile for water to drink, for they could not drink the water of the Nile. 7 full days passed after the Lord had struck the Nile. Then the Lord said to Moshe, "Go into Pharaoh and say to him, Thus says the Lord, let my people go that they may serve me. But if you refuse to let them go, behold, I will plague all your country with frogs. The Nile shall swarm with frogs that shall come up into your house and into your bedroom and on your bed and in the houses of your servants and your people and into your ovens and your kneading bowls. The frogs shall come up upon you, on your people, and all your servants." The Lord said to Moshe, "Say to Aaron, stretch out your hand with your staff over the rivers, over the canals, and over the pools, and make frogs come up on the land of Mitzrayim." So Aaron stretched out his hand over the waters of Mitzrayim, and the frogs came up and covered the land of Mitzrayim. But the magicians did the same by their secret arts and made frogs come up on the land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh called Moshe, and Aharon said, "Plead with the Lord to take away the frogs from me and from my people, and I will let the people go to sacrifice to the Lord." Moshe said to Pharaoh, "Be pleased to command me when I am to plead for you and for your servants and for your people, that the frogs may be cut off from you and from your houses and left only in the Nile." He said, "Tomorrow," Moshe said, "be it as you say, so that you may know that there is no one like the Lord our God. The frogs shall go away from you and from your houses and from your servants and your people. They shall be only left in the Nile." So Moshe and Aharon went out from Pharaoh, and Moshe cried to the Lord about the frogs, as he had agreed with Pharaoh. And the Lord did according to the word of Moshe. The frogs died out in the houses, the courtyards, and the fields, and they gathered them together in heaps, and the land stank. But when Pharaoh saw that there was a respite, he hardened his heart and would not listen to them, as the Lord had said. Then the Lord said to Moshe, "Say to Aharon, stretch out your staff and strike the dust of the earth, so that it may become gnats in all the land of Mitzrayim." And they did so. Aharon stretched out his hand with his staff and struck the dust of the earth, and there was gnats on man and beast. All the dust of the earth became gnats in all the land of Mitzrayim. The magicians tried by their secret arts to produce gnats, but they could not. So there were gnats on man and beast. Then the magician said to Pharaoh, "This is the finger of God." But Pharaoh's heart was hardened, and he would not listen to them, as the Lord had said. Then the Lord said to Moshe, "Rise up early in the morning and present yourself to Pharaoh as he goes out to the water, and say to him, 'Thus says the Lord, if you let my people go, that they may serve me. Or else, if you will not let my people go, behold, I will send swarms of flies on you and your servants and your people and into your houses. And the houses of the people of Mitzrayim shall be filled with swarms of flies and all the ground on which they stand. But on that day I will set apart the land of Goshen, where my people dwell, so that no swarms of flies shall be there, that you may know that I am the Lord in the midst of the earth. Thus I will put a division between my people and your people. Tomorrow this sign shall happen.' And the Lord did so. There came great swarms of flies into the house of Pharaoh and into his servants' houses. Throughout all the land of Mitzrayim, the land was ruined by the swarms of flies. Then Pharaoh called Moshe and Aharon and said, 'Go sacrifice your God within the land.' But Moshe said, 'It would not be right to do so, for the offerings we shall sacrifice to the Lord are an abomination to the people of Mitzrayim. If we sacrifice offerings abominable to them before their eyes, will they not stone us? We must go 3 days' journey into the wilderness to sacrifice the Lord our God, as he tells us.' So Pharaoh said, 'I will let you go to sacrifice the Lord your God in the wilderness, only you must not go very far away. Plead for me.' Then Moshe said, 'Behold, I am going out from you, and I will plead with the Lord that the swarms of flies may depart from Pharaoh, from his servants, and from his people tomorrow. Only let not Pharaoh cheat again by not letting the people go to sacrifice to the Lord.' So Moshe went out from Pharaoh and prayed to the Lord. And the Lord did as Moshe asked, and removed the swarms of flies from Pharaoh, from his servants, and from his people. Not one remained. But Pharaoh hardened his heart this time also and did not let the people go."
So what do you have to think about this or say about it? What's your comments? Daniel got something, okay?
It's just me, but it seems strange why Moses talked to Pharaoh and said, "You choose the day for the frogs to go away." But while at the same time, Moses is the one who chose the day for the gnats and the flies and everything else, and not Pharaoh. What was gained by Pharaoh choosing the day versus Moses?
Repeat.
What was gained by Pharaoh choosing the day versus Moses?
I never thought about that, Daniel, but that's a fascinating question. Okay. Mike.
I don't understand. All the blood turned, all the water turned to blood, the streams, the canals, even the wooden buckets and the stone jars. Yeah. But then the magicians came up and they did the same thing.
Now we'll talk about that. Very interesting statement. We need to understand something that God, remember the book of, whole book of the Bible is about the actions, thoughts, and deeds of the creator of heaven and earth, not men. Not Pharaoh, not Moses, not Abraham, nobody but the actions of God himself. And we're going to see the actions of God taking place here, even though it sounds like actions of men are there doing it. Any other thoughts, comments?
Verse 8:26. That Moses said, it's not right that we do so, for we sacrifice the abomination of Egyptians to the Lord our God. If we sacrifice the abomination of the Egyptians before their eyes, will they not stone us? Who's stoning who here?
Who what?
The Egyptians will stone the...
Yeah. Because the way they were going to sacrifice would be an abomination to the Egyptians. So I'm sorry, what? Oh no, it had nothing to do with the lamb. They would kill, they slaughter a goat, or they slaughter a lamb, or they slaughter anything, but the certain way in which they take. It's kind of hard because even Pharaoh accepted, the Egyptians did eat meat, by the way. They did not eat meat. It's the process of the slaughtering is a process that they did not like. Yes?
Remember Joseph said that we have to get permission from Pharaoh to
Correct.
Live in the Goshen because farmers were an abomination to
Correct.
The Egyptians.
Correct. Called shepherds. Was not unusual. Yes?
I've heard things before, you know, other people saying, well, God did those things because those were gods that Egypt had and things like that. And I never really put it together like that.
That Egyptian did what?
That the Egyptians had gods. Like the flies, and I've heard people say that's why God chose them, but I hadn't really considered today that obviously God knew that their magicians
going
could
to
duplicate
show
these things, and
Elohim's got to show us something.
Right, he chose
yes.
to do those things because their magicians could do the same. He obviously
we'll
has
talk
some kind
about
of
that
plan.
Very carefully. Very carefully and listen very carefully when I'm going to talk to you about that, because that's one of the big issues. But before we go there, let's remember that in the very beginning, God told Moses, I will deliver them out with a strong hand, and I will kill their firstborn. He told that to Moses. You remember? Before he even entered in. Alright? And when Moses went there, of course, it didn't go according to Moses' plan, right? And Moses got upset with God because God didn't do the job yet. And God turned around and says, wait, and you will see, Moses, what I'm going to do to Pharaoh and all of Egypt so they know that I am Yahuwah Elohim. So he's proving something to, quote, a group of people. Okay. The non-chosen group of people. Put that way. Does that make sense to you? Israel was the chosen group. When was Israel begin to be chosen? Do you remember? Abraham. And he told Abraham, I am going to send your descendants to a land that's going to be harsh on them and cruel to them. Now, that's 400 years earlier. Now, the Pharaoh that knew Joseph liked Joseph, and Joseph liked Pharaoh, and Joseph was the second most powerful man on the face of the earth at that point in time. Pharaoh was the most powerful one. And lo and behold, 400 years later, or ages later, everybody died. New Pharaoh came on the scene. Remember that different Pharaoh came on the scene that did not know Joseph. We say, well, I mean, he didn't know Joseph. A lot of people. Let me ask you a question. How many generations, now just think, don't answer the question, but you want to think about this. How many generations has it been since the first president of the United States was there? How many of the youth even know anything about him? They don't know anything about him. It's not taught in school, not taught in school, nowhere. So it's long forgotten. Oh, that's ancient history. Who cares about what takes place? It's even hard for us to look back and see, why should I care about what the Greeks did? Well, the book of Acts pinpoints exactly why we should care about what they taught. Because in our society today, we have an awful lot of those very Greek philosophies in existence in our country. Remember, Jeff talked about that many, many moons ago. So it's there for us to say, okay, what is it, God, you want us to look at? What is it, God, you have in mind? This is the issue here, okay? So we're looking here. Where am I at? Something he first said. The most important thing is, what's the first sentence in the first verse in the chapter 7? Why would the creator of heaven and earth, the Elohim of heaven and earth, and say to Moses, I'm going to make you an Elohim? Same thing that you call God, Elohim. Why would he do that for? Okay, so some of you, tell me what the name Elohim means. The what?
Mighty one.
Mighty one's plurality. Or one who has mighty bites. A lot of power, a lot of strength, a lot of destruction. His ability to destroy. Yes.
Well, in the New Testament, Paul says that these things were written for our benefit. They are putting on a play. It's a deadly play, but they're working out a scenario that God is going to use later to teach us with.
Okay, so if that is a play, and God's the author of the play, then God really is a very powerful writer and institutes and directs the killing of all the firstborn, and had that in mind when he created Adam and Eve.
That's not what you asked.
Oh.
You said, why did he say that?
Why?
We're not talking about creation and forever.
All right.
We're talking about right here.
I misunderstood
here.
What your
He's
answer
playing,
was.
He is playing out a scenario, and Pharaoh...
What is the scenario in the first verse? What's the scenario in the first verse?
Moses is God.
And who is?
And who is Pharaoh?
No.
Who is Aaron? Messiah?
The Messiah. We have an active here like the Father and the Son right there in the first verse in chapter 7. And guess who has to do all the talking? Aaron does all the talking. What did Messiah say? I can do nothing unless my Father told me what to say and what to do. As we go through this entire part, we're going to see Aaron doing the talking and doing the action, and he's going to carry out everything that Moses told him to do. Right? So we have a picture of not just two men, but a picture of God revealing to everybody that I'm going to make you to Pharaoh, not to the world. Okay? So we have to kind of, the first verse is very, very important to pay attention to. Because everything else starts explaining all that. So we have that in mind. And, of course, everything God told Moses, Moses had to tell Aaron. Yes.
I just thought, you know, the verse before that, you know, Moses kept saying, I'm a poor speaker. So it seemed like God wanted him to be the speaker, but because he kept
true
saying,
to a point, but that uncircumcised lips means he's not paying attention to anything I'm saying. Moses wouldn't even, because as Aaron's supposed to speak to Pharaoh, not Moses. Okay, so when someone spoke to Pharaoh, it wasn't Moses. But Moses' words were told by God to say to his son, or to his brother, Aaron, and Aaron repeated those words. So in a sense, both Aaron and Moses had uncircumcised lips. They weren't being heard. God deliberately did not want Moses to, Pharaoh to hear it. But to find out why. Because he's anti-Pharaoh, right? Is that the object? He's anti-Egyptian, right? He's anti-anybody except Moses. All right? Not really, because later on in prophecy, he calls the Egyptians my beloved ones. Right? You remember that in prophecy. Yeah. So God's not out to get people. He's not out to get even. That's not his plan. Nor was it his plan in the very beginning. All right? If he wanted to get even, he should have killed Adam and Eve in the spot. Start over again. No. What did he do? He gave them mercy. The judgment was still there. As God says, Messiah said, justice and mercy. First judgment. Judgment was, you're out of my house. Mercy, I'm not going to kill you. I'm going to let you live. Okay? It's a simple story, right? Simple analogy. So it's that way with God from the very beginning. He's not out to destroy his creation or the ones that he created to be like unto him. That's not his object. His object is to deliver them out of something. Right? So as we continue, well, I got very far on this. I was hoping to get through this entire thing here today. I'm going to get to the, what? In verse 3, the Creator said, I will harden or strengthen, you might call it, Pharaoh's heart and multiply my signs and my wonders in the land of Egypt, not in any other land or the land of non-Israeli people. Didn't have to show these things to the house of Israel. He could have, but he didn't. Because he promised something unto Abraham. Remember, I told you at the very beginning of this book, very first chapter, I think it's the very first chapter or second chapter, when Moses is talking to him in the bush, I have come to fulfill what? To
Abraham.
It's a covenant that he made with Abraham, the covenant he made with Isaac, the covenant he made with Jacob. It's not about the exodus of people leaving a horrible, horrible leader, rotten person, rotten country. It's about doing something that he said, now I'm going to institute, begin my covenant, establish it now, and this is it. All that took place, because he told Abraham, 400 years. Now Abraham knew, okay, you're not going to carry out your covenant with me. For 400 years. A long time. Did Abraham get upset? Was he mad? Did he throw a tantrum? He believed God. Now he knew that bad things were going to take place. He didn't have the idea of picture of just how bad it was going to be. Because God did not relieve that to him. Except that certain place where he said, I want you to sacrifice this, and a fire went between the two. That God himself made that covenant. And Abraham knew it wasn't him. It was God going to carry out that order. All right, so let's go on. Now, last week, Jeff came up with a comment, and I didn't want to comment back on him because he would take away what I'm going to say today because what he said last week was true. I didn't back him up. I said nothing. I said, okay, now he took away what I wanted to say today. When it says hardened his heart, that's different than giving strength to his heart that he is able to endure. God gave strength to Moses. But he gave strength in spirit and in power. He gave strength to Joshua in spirit and in power. And this one, what did God do to harden, quote, make Pharaoh's heart more hardened toward whom? Yes.
I think that's why God had those first few miracles be something that his magicians, his experts could also reproduce. The staff, which isn't really a plague, but it is something Pharaoh saw. So the staff turning into serpents, the blood and the frogs were all within the power of his own magicians, his own experts to be able to pull off.
Okay.
So it made Pharaoh maybe think that, this God might have some power, but so do my guys. Well, so he's my equal or something.
He also told Moses and Aaron, Joseph will harden his heart, but not against you. Nor will he harden his heart against the Israelites. Who's he going to harden his heart against? God. Now, how would God do that? How would God make anybody harden their heart against him?
By just not believing what they see or believing what they see. People from God, like Moses, that God was doing that.
You just
treat God as he didn't know.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, when you command someone, because Pharaoh was like the God on earth, and no one told him anything. So to me, when you tell an absolute prideful, conceited man something, and you command him, and there's no humility or to obey an order, to me, your heart then shows forth what it is. And that's what, to me, hardened his heart.
Well, his heart was already contrary in the very beginning. It meant to be that way in the very beginning. Way time in Abraham's time, it was meant for one person to be that hard against God. It didn't happen accidentally. It's planned by God. We say, oh, no, God would never do that kind of stuff. He destroyed the whole earth. God would never destroy innocent people. God destroyed the whole earth. Only 8 people survived.
I was really not happy with that whole, you know, it's been hard. It's been one of those puzzling things for me for a long time. And then when you look in the New Testament, it talks about the potter and the clay and, you know, doesn't the potter have right to
authority over, right? It's actually the promise.
And Jacob, have I loved Esau? So all of that has been very confusing, but I looked it up in the Hebrew. It kind of helped me a little bit with, looked up the word hardened. When it says God hardened his heart, and hardened meant strengthened.
Strengthened.
So it kind of made me think that maybe
he strengthened his bitterness against God.
Right. That's what he did.
That's what Jeff said last week, but I couldn't interrupt because he just said it and he took it away from me last week. But I don't need to say more about this hardening of the heart. It's how God works. I'll give you an example here in a minute. Go ahead.
I was just thinking he's basically answering a fool according to his folly.
That's an interesting statement. Yes. that's more wise. We'll prove that in a minute. Go ahead.
I was thinking of the New Testament where it says, give them over to a strong delusion that they would believe a lie. I was thinking of that verse in, I don't know, Romans. He will give them over to a strong delusion that they would believe a lie because they wouldn't obey. I don't know where it is. And am I right on track, though, with the meaning
given
of...
Given over to reprobate mind?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Not exactly. I understand what you're saying there, but I'm not going to go there. I know what you're talking about there. There's a parallel that I agree with. Let's put you as a young mother or a young father. Young, not your old ones now. The young ones. When you were first had your child and you were, 15, 16, 17, whatever it was, and all of a sudden, this child slowly grows up, cute, cuddly, and all that kind of stuff. And then the child begins to do something you don't like him to do it, or her doing. What do? You begin to correct them. Well, at first, okay, at work. And as they become, you know, the adolescent years, then you have to do a different kind of correction, right? Doesn't work with a belt, doesn't work with threats. It works with some penalty. You take away this, take away that, can't go here, can't go there. And then they resent you. Right? And you as a mom or a dad at that point said, they just resent me. I can't do anything about it. I got to stop them from doing this. That's a Jew, right? You just stop them. Now, then another thing, and you stop them doing something else. And they begin to resent you more and more. And after a while, they come to this point was, I hate you, Mom. I hate you, Dad. You ever heard those words come out of your own mouth, maybe? No. Now, just a picture. When men and women do not have that incredible inward wisdom built within them to change that situation. How many times have you, now, you older parents, have not been able to change anything, and your child now is growing up and maybe still despises you? What can you do about it? You just kind of get out of their life, right? Okay. So bitterness builds up, resentment gets out, and the child hardens his heart, not anything else, but his heart against you. So we have the very same thing here with take a look here. Just a minute now. We're talking about the snakes. All right? Remember the snakes? What about the snakes? Do you remember the snakes? What happened? Let me ask you a really honest, upfront question. Because no place else in the entire Bible does it ever say that. But only here. And we question, oh man, if human beings, flesh and blood human beings, can take a stick, turn it into something alive, deadly, what would they need God for? They don't need God. They could do it themselves. What about the frogs? Do you really believe that they could bring frogs out? Or do you think they really could take water and turn it into death? Remember, when we talk about the snakes, we'll talk about it in a minute. When Pharaoh came up with this thing about the frogs, who did Pharaoh go to get rid of them? Why did he go to his own powerful, mighty men who created the live stick into a deadly snake? Why did he tell them? By the way, get rid of those frogs. Okay, now ask yourself a question. If man, human beings, flesh and blood, can actually create life out of a piece of wood, they don't need God. They could take a stone and turn it into life without God. They could turn a turtle into a pig if they so like, because they're like God. Now, do you believe that? I believe it was a joke. I believe God deliberately, because listen very carefully about the snakes. Listen very carefully about the snake. Let's go to where the snake's at. What verse is that in? Okay. At Pharaoh, verse 9 is that Pharaoh, let's see, take that rod before Pharaoh, take Aaron's rod before Pharaoh, and cast it before Pharaoh, it shall become a serpent. Oh. Now, it happened. Now, of course, what did Pharaoh do? He called in three groups of people. Did you notice that? Three groups of people. Ones were called the wise men. The second was called the sorcerers. And the last one was called the magicians. Three different groups of people. And when the magicians, see a little trick here, right? Throw your rod down, you magicians, and change it into a living snake that will kill. Do you think man has the ability? Why don't you go out and get yourself a stick, throw it on the ground, and command it to turn into a living snake, a deadly one? Can you do that? Can any human being ever do that? Can God turn a stone into the sons of Isaac? According to a prophet, yes, he can. So when they cast theirs down, they what did they do? Aaron, let's see, where verse that came a stake, and Sarah also called the wise men serpents to the command to, and the enhancers, the enchanters, and they cast down their snake and its rod, and they became serpents. But whose snake ate it up? Now, did these men have the power, or were they just enchanting? You remember Daniel's going to go in through it, or Ahara has done, about Elijah over there, and the water, and the big bonfire thing? Who brought that about? Yeah. He couldn't. But he knew God could. Now, if you were Moses and Aaron, and you, because they already know that's that rod, that piece of wood, can come alive. A deadly snake. Now they cast it down and became a deadly snake. Now we have a picture that those other rods were cast down and they became deadly snakes. But there's something different with this one compared to the other one. Can people turn? We say, oh, wait a minute. It's the demons. It's the underworld that really did it. Really? Can an angel, be honest with yourself, can an angel create life? Who can create life? All right. Yeah, Jeff.
Well, the question to your last one is, yes, if they are given the power to do so. And the prime example of that is Job, when the adversary was allowed to go bring boils and all sorts of sicknesses to Job.
I don't have a problem with that one. Tom talked about saying something that has no life
right.
becomes living.
But the point though is that these...
disagree with me. I just can't see right. human beings having that strength. Even the power of the devil cannot even create life. Satan himself, the most powerful of the bunch, cannot create life. Gabriel cannot create life.
Yes, the point is that it's not in their power to do so. They are given the power to do
so. So who gave them power?
Of course, God is the one.
Elohim turned them into it.
Right.
This is the power of Elohim, not the power of men.
Alone.
Men can't do it alone or single. They can't do it as a group. They can't turn something that doesn't exist into something that's alive. Yes.
I've heard like even the frogs thing that they did. They would throw these things and create smoke and throw them in there like
we'll get
like modern day magicians.
Now one thing about the snake.
Illusionary is my point.
Aaron's rod ate it all up. And Aaron's rod remained a deadly snake. Right? No, it turned back into a rod. Turned back into wood. Now, can human beings just ask yourself a question? Any human being in the face of the history of mankind, whether it's pagan, 2,000, 3 billion years ago, I don't care, throw something in the ground and turn it into something alive. And then turn it back into what it once was. This is the power of Elohim. This is not the power of enchanters. It's not the power of Pharaoh's men. It's not the power of Pharaoh. It's the power of Elohim who did it. Now, very fast, they have been. Go ahead.
Then what's witchcraft if that's not true?
What is witchcraft? What is witchcraft? Jeff.
Yeah, actually, it's a very good question, and it's kind of the same thing as I was talking about with Job. What is the primary situation that we're dealing with these enchanters and such that were able to do some of these things up to a certain point? It was like, okay, hey, your God can do this, our enchanters can do this, appealing to their pantheon, except up to a point, then suddenly, oh, there is no power, okay, greater power anymore, and so, oh, right, even the enchanters at one point says, hey, so, look, what we can't deal with this God. This God is God. So, in the answer to the question of what is witchcraft or anything else, it is, in a sense, the same thing that the enchanters were doing in Egypt, giving people a sense to draw into a power that exists outside of God.
I have no disagreement with that at all.
Right. But what is the ultimate point of that is drawing people's attention away, thinking that there is an appeal, something that they can appeal to, a power other than God.
Okay, we can look at it from this point of view, that these were demons changed into dead snakes. And the other snake ate them all up. We can view it from that point of view if you want. I'm just saying, mankind, those does not need God at all if they can create life. By any source, whether it's by a demon, whether it's by witchcraft, whether it's by the devil, he can't create life. Somebody else brought forth this thing that's alive. Whether God brought them forth, or whether they quote these rods, end of quote, weren't rods, end of quote, I've heard this statement before, and they were really demons in the shape of a frog, or shape of a rod, and they threw it to the ground, and the rod turned into a demon shaping himself like a snake. Right? Take it this way. If you accept that, fine. But it's not the power of man to do that. Otherwise, we don't need God.
I just don't think it's unreasonable about the question, is it witchcraft? I mean, well, to me, it's. So here's what I'm saying. God can give Satan, Hasatan, the power, although limited, right, to deceive, to test, and all the different things that he does by doing that. I don't think it would be unreasonable to kind of...
I don't either.
Okay. Yeah.
That's not my issue.
Sure.
My issue is these men didn't have the power to turn something that was nothing into alive and deadly. And no matter how you look at it, men cannot do that. It's another source, another power, or other powers, if you want to use that terminology. The fascinating thing about that, it killed the snakes. They didn't come back, did they? Rod snake ate all the other snakes. They don't come back.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. Are you saying Hasatan? Because in the scriptures, he called down fire,
right,
when he was afflicting Job's family.
That.
He controlled weather.
Yes, he could do that.
He put sores on
under
him.
Authority of the Messiah. Or the authority of God, yes.
Okay, because even in future tense, times we're coming up on,
right,
people are going to be dying and coming back to life.
I have no
according
problem
to these false prophets and
I have,
all
I have
these.
No, I'm not arguing that issue. I'm right here in the book of Exodus. That's where
I know,
I'm at right now. What
is it
God
is
telling us?
I'm asking you, what are you talking about when you're saying that these things can't do anything, that it's all God, because if God, Elohim, is doing that, then that makes him evil, and God cannot sin, and he's not evil.
That's not exactly what Scripture says.
Giving the power
to do the evil. Man has the power to do evil.
If I'm wrong, what I'm hearing you trying to get a one simple statement is that other than God, the only source that's the life giver, no one else or nothing else can give life by itself without God giving permission and making it happen.
That's... And even if, quote, these rods, quote, were shaped in a form of the demon, shaped in the form of a rod, take it as it is. But when they turned into, quote, a snake, deadly one, another deadly snake ate them all up one by one. They couldn't defend themselves. Quote, those other snakes could not defend themselves. What do those other snakes represent? That's the question. Yes.
If they could do what, if they had the power to do that, then they could have made it where they swallowed up Aaron's snake. And that's just plain and simple. That it was a.
They almost had to submit to Aaron's stick, which is called the rod of Elohim. So we're looking at this thing. We say, now what are these snakes representing? We don't know how many there were. What? Why? Why a snake? Why was the snake? Why? He didn't turn into a snake until afterwards. He wasn't. He's a four-legged creature. And then he was cursed with cry on the belly. Not before. The picture you have, you look at it, did you look right in your right in the Bible itself? He was not talking, and the pictures of a snake coming down that tree and enticing her, it doesn't show up in Scripture. He became one afterwards, not before. Yes?
A snake is always a symbol of lies.
Lies and also death. Because that's the object. What does he want? What did the serpent want to do in the very beginning? Why? I'm going to trick them so they'll take the fruit and they'll die. But they didn't die. They lived. And had children. Yes.
So if a snake is the symbol of lie, and what did you say? Destruction? Death? Then why did he say later in the camp, you need to look at the snake and then you live?
We'll get to there when that comes. You'll understand that when it comes. The snake is death. Yes. It represents death, not life. They were healed because the snake is dead. Not alive. We'll get there when that time comes. After he has done this thing with the snakes, turned them in. Oh, what do the snakes represent? Correct. The men had these snakes, right? Or, quote, these rods. They turned into the snake, and God was eating them all up. What does snake represent? An awful lot of them there. Followed up in victory. It means that, in my mind, I could be 100% wrong. Everything I'm saying today could be 100% wrong. What I'm saying today is this. God can kill death. God can kill death. Says that in what book? Revelations. Thing you are over with. God kills death. Right? Does that make sense to you? Now let's go on. Okay, where was I at now? They turned to water. This is fascinating too. I'll ask you another question. We know that he turned, the first plague is water. That turned into death. Right? The water turned into death. Everything in the river, dead. And the ponds, dead. Now, we'll be very careful with this. I'm going to have to go. I don't think I'll get very far today at all, for crying out loud. I thought they're going through this real quick. He wants to take this rod that turned into a serpent, and he wants to cast it or put the curse upon the water and make it death. Now, it didn't affect Pharaoh directly, did it? Now, here's where I have a real strong issue. We'll get later on down. Verse 19. And Yahweh said unto Moses, Say unto Aaron. She's talking to Aaron. Aaron's doing the work. Aaron is doing the word of Moses, like Yahshua is doing the word of God. You understand that? Take thy rod, stretch it out, thy hand upon the waters of Egypt, upon their streams, upon their rivers, upon their ponds, and upon their pools of waters, that they may become blood, that there may be blood throughout all the land of Egypt, both in wood and in stone. Okay? Death. Do you notice there's one area he didn't say? The land of Goshen is not listed. At that point in time, the land of Goshen still was not part of Egypt power. Under the jurisdiction, yes. But there were separate, different people lived there in the land of Goshen than the people that lived in the land of Egypt. Now, as we read this farther, who had to dig wells in order to get water? Who? Egypt? Did Israel have dig wells? Not a one. That I read what is there, I don't add what is not there. I only read what is there, I don't add what's there, not there. It's like adding to and then subtracting from. I can't do that. You could believe, accept anything on the sun you want. I can't find it written. I'm very strong in saying what is written first. Primary thing, this is Devarim Elohim. I'm going to accept what is written by Devarim Elohim, and I'm not going to put into thoughts of the sages. I'm not going to put into thoughts of Sesame DeMille. I'm not going to put the thoughts of Christianity. I'm not going to put into thoughts of rabbinicness. I'm not going to put into thoughts of messianic stuff. I'm just going to read what it says. You know that about me, right? I don't alter from what it says. Now, anybody else can alter. Anybody else can change. Anybody else can add to, subtract, or even change the definition of that Hebrew word to their satisfaction. Or that, in this case, the Septuagint, change that Greek word into anything that is their satisfaction. I can't. That's me. I'm Richard. Either put a boy at the door. Just tell me to shut up. Start the party. Now the very first action is life in the water killed. How long did it last? 7 days. First day, second day, third day, fourth day, fifth day, sixth day, and even the Sabbath day. No life came up from the river. Unusual number, right? Remember, seven has to do with an oath or with a swear. He made that deal with Abraham. I will bring them out with a strong arm. Let's continue on here for just a minute. You had a comment?
I have a question. Because the magicians did the same thing. Where did they get the water to turn to blood if all the water had been turned to blood?
I'll tell you, Pat, to my great wisdom understanding, I have the slightest idea. How's that work? I wasn't there, so I don't know.
That with all of these plagues, they only did copycats. They didn't do anything new. Kind of like, and I don't want to go off anywhere else, but I'm saying like through evolution, there's only mutations, and that's an argument to say nothing new was created. There was always mutations of the same genetic form.
Yeah. For
and
a limited
with
period
all
of
time. These, with all of these plagues, they only he didn't turn... change the bloody water into blue water. They didn't do snakes
into blood,
into gophers. So they could have been as simplified as they took snakes in a cold position, which they'd say solid, throw them on the floor, and as they heated up, they turned into the, but they didn't change anything. There was nothing new added.
So I don't know. I wasn't there. I, you know, your guess is as good as mine where they got the water. Maybe they snuck up the land of Goshen and got the water. I don't know. Anyway, yes. Yeah, but that was afterwards.
Yeah, but maybe that's what the magicians did. They wouldn't dug some water.
I don't know. I just don't have an answer for you. I wasn't there, nor does the Word of God tell us how they got it. Like it's unimportant to God for us to know that minor scientifically proof evidence. Right? We need scientific proof. No, we don't. This is Devar Im Elohim. That's all that matters. At least to me. Now it comes with these frogs. Now, listen again. When the frogs did, they did something to the borders of Egypt. The Israelites didn't have frogs. Who had to clean out the, after he killed the frogs? I find it funny because his, quote, magicians, quote, brought forth frogs too. Really? Did they bring forth more than God did? Try to outdo God? Now, and Pharaoh didn't go to his magicians and say, by the way, clean up the blood. No, 7 days. He didn't go to his magicians, by the way, get rid of the frogs. They couldn't kill a single one of them, except maybe in their own bedroom. what did Pharaoh do? He went to, in a sense, horrible way to think, but he actually went to the Devar Im Elohim of Israel. Through Moses. And so Moses says, okay. Now the question is, the timing. Daniel talked about the time. I couldn't give you an answer, Daniel, at all. I don't have an answer why he, Pharaoh, had the time. It has to do probably with endurance. I don't know. I have no question on that. I asked that question myself. Privately says, okay, it's not there. I don't know. To be honest with you there, Daniel. I thought it's kind of interesting that he had to beg for it, literally. And Moses says, when do you want it done? Tomorrow? Okay. But, you know, they had to clean up the mess. It stunk. Bad news. Bad news. So in verse 12 it says, and Moses and Aaron went before Pharaoh, and Moses cried unto Yahuwah because of the frogs which he brought. He, capital H, not them, capital lowercase t, lowercase h, lowercase e, lowercase m, but he, Yahuwah, brought. Because they couldn't kill him. Let's go on to the next one. Drop down to verse 16 of Exodus, the 8th chapter. Is that where we're at? We might get through this pretty quick. Okay. Because it's only... Okay. And here's the third, called third plague. Now, this is a very interesting one. He didn't go to Pharaoh like he did plague number one and plague number two. This time, God just said, say to Aaron, do this. And what did he do? And smite the dust. So he took his rod, Aaron's rod, which is the rod of Elohim now, bam, hit the dirt. Bam. I don't know how many times he hit it, but he must have hit it several times, I don't know. He smote it. Smite it like he struck it real hard. Didn't like he took the rod and really hit the ground hard. To cause a cloud, you might say, up. And yeah, both, and it says lice up there, and everything I've looked into, and what Jeff read, it's closer to bird gnats, a little flying, tiny gnat that's irritating like crazy. Where the lice came from is from ancient 1611 English. They didn't know what it was, so they threw that word in there. Okay? And now, no magicians did it. Joshua, that's the end of the copycat. Oh, you're the one who said copycat? Or you're the one who said copycat?
I
that was the end of the copycat. They couldn't copy it anymore.
Right. Because they could take the existing frogs, put them over here,
and
like they made it.
They could do what they want. We weren't there, I don't know.
They could take the bloody water and act like they made it.
I'm not arguing with whatsoever. I think it's kind of comical, to tell you the honest truth, to outmaneuver Elohim. And Elohim just made him look like a total fool because they couldn't get rid of him. Yes.
I think that this clearly illustrates that Elohim gives HaSatan, witchcraft, whatever you want to call it, certain power and ability.
I don't have any problem with witchcraft. That's not my issue here.
I'm just saying whatever it's called, the work.
You know. No, that wasn't the work of witchcraft. Frog wasn't the work of witchcraft.
What?
Frogs being wasn't the work of witchcraft. Well, the they couldn't do it. I mean, so you can believe anything you want. That's okay. You don't have. I'm just saying I have a hard time believing any human being, whether they have power of ancient world or power of demons or power of everything underworld, I don't care. They, human beings, cannot do that. And this is what's important to pay attention to. Because we give credit, normally to give credit to the magicians turning the thing into snake. They give credit to the magicians for turning into frogs more. So credit to the magicians to turn into blood. What? No, they're human beings. They don't need God if they could do that. Never needed God. Why would they even think about having to serve the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob for? They can't. I don't disagree with the demonic world. I don't disagree with the powers that God grants them to do. I don't disagree with Elohim. Because God said to Moses, I will kill all of the Elohim of Egypt. He didn't say, I'm going to kill all the, we turn into gods. It says Elohim of Egypt. Now, to a great extent, there are several of them are in the process of dying here. The first bunch was the snakes. They're dead. They didn't come back. They couldn't turn back into a stick. They're gone. Second thing, death. They couldn't bring back life. They couldn't even recover the Nile. Only God can. Another demon is dead. Or another Elohim is dead. Remember the Revelation talk about a frog is one of the demons that comes out of the devil? Yes.
History records that Egypt never survived these events. After their king was killed... Yeah, well. The whole thing played out. Their queen married a Hittite, and the whole nation of Israel became a
We'll get there when we get there. Find it very fascinating that when we're looking at this thing, you're seeing the action of the blood and the frogs and the gnats. Now we're going to go into what's called a swarm. Some believe translated being flies. It can't translate to flies because it doesn't really stay there. We don't one way or the other. Some believe it's ants because it crawl upon the earth. And, you know, in Africa, when ants go crazy, they go crazy. So that's also another thought that could be the swarm was the ants rather than flies. I don't care what they were. I have no idea what they were. I wasn't there. The word is related to the word plague. That's all it's related to. Okay. On the fourth one, of course, he went up and says, now you can talk to Pharaoh. And he's going to do this stuff. And let's see, one, two, three. Yeah, then one, two, three. Then the flies or the swarm came upon the borders of Egypt. Now, God said something very fascinating here. Verse 23. Now, as I said before, I mean, you could disagree with me on this because a lot of people do. That's okay. I don't see the Israelites, when the blood came, digging wells. It's not written, but the Egyptian people had to do it. I don't see Israel having to kill a bunch of frogs out of their bedrooms and out of their cookingware and having to live that stink in the land of Goshen. But it does say there in the land of the Egyptians. I don't see the lice or the gnats ever bothering, it was to bother Pharaoh and his leadership, his men, and his country. It doesn't say anything in the Word of God. The Israelites were involved with that. Okay? Now, that's a great witness to them, don't you think? Incredible. But the Israelites also had a heart that was hardened against God. All we're seeing one here is Pharaoh's heart being hardened. But all the things that God has done, and history, we'll get to there, we get there, the children of Israel, except for just two of them, other than Moses and Aaron, and I think Miriam, hardened their hearts. And they said, why did you take us out of Egypt for? It was a wonderful country, wonderful land, wonderful thing, wonderful food, wonderful time. Why did you take us out of there? They hardened their heart against God. And he said, well, they hardened their hearts against Moses. Well, you're hardened against Moses. You're hardening your heart against the creator of heaven and earth. All right? So it's the same picture, but we focus in on just one bad guy. We as human beings are still made of flesh and blood. We can harden our hearts against God when he doesn't carry out the pathway we wanted to go. God didn't take them, we'll get there, the easy way out of Egypt. He took them on the most difficult trip that you can imagine. And it took 40 years. Long, long time, don't you think? Can you endure 40 years of hardship of God? Pretty heavy stuff, isn't it? But he didn't punish them as badly as he did the Egyptians, if I could use that term, punishment, or had judgment upon them as bad as the Egyptians. And so therefore he said, I'm going to make a sign, Pharaoh, you're going to know the difference right now. You haven't paid attention to now. Now I want you to do this. I'm going to make this fourth plague here. It's going to happen. And guess what? It's not going to touch a single Israelite. What was that one? What was the fourth one? Some kind of flies or swarm, like maybe ants. Didn't affect them. He made a complete separation between the two. And what did Pharaoh do? Well, verse 25 is very funny. Verse 25. In a way, God made a distinction for Pharaoh to notice the difference between what God is doing to the house of Israel compared to what God is doing to the house of Egypt. Making it very clear what he's doing. Now, does that mean that he favors the Israelites, loved them more, cared about them more? God is not a what? Respecter of persons. He's fulfilling the covenant. And it's going to take 40 years for him to fulfill it to the next generation to get them into the promised land. Yes.
I'm understanding you correctly about the first three. You're saying that the Israelites were kind of kept from them, even though their magicians and sorcerers duplicated and brought them up to harm themselves. I mean, do you know what I mean? Were they kept from the first three plagues, the Israelites?
They were kept from all of them. The very first plague, the blood, there's no evidence written. I know it could go beyond what is written, and people can go beyond what is written. I look at what is written. Does that make sense to you, Joshua? Sure. Look what's written. It says the Egyptians, not the Israelites, had to dig wells. So why didn't the Israelites have to dig wells? Their blood, their water was not affected. Now, if you know anything about the Nile, it's got a lot of mouths. The mouth closest to the east was where the Israelites were.
Yeah, but as it says, you just read about, yes, I will distinguish between my people and your people. And now it says that, but it actually If we could say because what's written, it wasn't written before that.
It wasn't written before that because Pharaoh wasn't paying attention. He wasn't hearing. He was still dumb in his ears. The words of God became uncircumcised to him. He didn't care. He said, why should I serve you? Why should I serve Elohim for? All right? And the second one there about the frogs. It says the Egyptians had to clean them up. Doesn't say anything about the frog going into the bedroom of any Israelite. Going into the, you're sleeping there, got a bunch of frogs, what's this, you know? But the Egyptians, yes.
It doesn't say anything about that.
Says it doesn't say it. I'm not going to fit it into it, so I don't add to it. Necessarily, it's there.
And I understand that, but does it go the other way, is what I'm saying. It doesn't say that they didn't go into the Israelite. I'm not lobbying for it. I'm just saying you have to go be consistent.
You can go both ways. I don't care. Anybody could go any which direction they want, Joshua. I'm not being fair. I'm not a fair guy. You should know me. I'm not a fair guy. I'm unfair. I really am. I'm more unfair than most people realize. If it's not written, I don't add it.
Sure.
I don't assume. That's me.
Sure.
Okay?
You can't make a case either way.
I can't make a case for them being cursed. I can't find that case. But that's just me. Every year I go through this thing, I get the same argument back from people left and right, because they have the Sesame DeMille picture in their mind. Sesame DeMille was a Catholic. Anti-Jewish. Let me go on here. I'm getting a little bit hotter than the collar here.
Then why does 22... Why is it, why does it say here, I shall separate the land of Goshen? Does that mean that nothing is going to hit the land of Goshen?
That's correct.
But that's
God sent them and had them live in the land of Goshen way back during the time of Joseph.
Yes, but that's before the gnats.
We have to be
careful.
And
the flies.
So
and then
now,
on 22.
Okay, I understand what you're saying. Okay. Yes, let's say, yes, they were cursed in all the plagues. Okay. I'm not going to go there because it's not written. Just because he separated them, what is he separating them for? When God separates something, what's he separated for?
For himself.
What is he separated for?
Himself.
No. To sanctify them. When God separated you from your family, sanctified you, and you're no longer part of your family, now you're the part of God. When God said to Abraham, depart from your family and go where? He separated, sanctified, separated Abraham from his family. Now, he separated Goshen from the land. He sanctified the people, not the land, the people. Yes.
When Joseph brought his family in, the people were separated in Goshen because they were going to have difficult dealings with the Egyptians. If in this picture we are destroying the gods of Egypt, those gods were not even worshipped in Goshen. The people in Goshen, until this most recent Pharaoh, still remembered who the God of Israel was.
Okay,
they didn't know all the commandments, but there's no indication that they were worshipped.
I'm
going to
move ahead a little bit here. I'll move ahead quite a ways here, because I'm not there yet. When did God separate the people of Goshen from the house of Egypt? When did God separate the people of Israel from the house of Egypt? When did he said, I'm going to fulfill my will to Moses. I will carry out the will I did for, the thing I said, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, we're at the point, he says, I'm going to separate them. Separate them from Egypt. What's he going to do with them? And when does he separate them? That moment, that second, that middle second?
I believe it was the moment they crossed the Red Sea.
the time they crossed the Red Sea. Complete separation that not even the Egyptian army could go after them. He's talking about future tense of separating the people of the land of Goshen. Not at that moment in time and seconds and milliseconds. God does not work on our time cycle. He does not work on our thinking process. He works on his thinking process. And when he separated Israel, they were still in the land of Egypt. He couldn't separate them. He couldn't sanctify them. He couldn't pull them out until they crossed the Red Sea. And the Egyptians could no longer come after them. Complete separation. So there is a separation. Now what's very fascinating about this statement, we go into this thing and Moses said, verse 27, we need to go 3 days' journey. Keep this in mind. 3 days? Interesting. Why not the first day? Why not Passover? Why not the fifth? Why wasn't the first day, the 15th day, the first day? Why wasn't then? Why 3 days? What was going to happen on the second day? What happened on the third day? 1, 2, 3. What do you think that points to? We're talking about a prophecy not only for the Israelites, but for the Son of God. What happened then on the third day? Didn't happen on the 15th, didn't happen on the 16th, it happened on the 17th day of the first month. We'll talk about that when we get there. We're a long ways away. But do you understand what I'm trying to get across? I see God's actions here, telling us well in advance what he's going to do. He told that to Abraham 400 years earlier. And we say, you sure took your time, didn't you? No. It's his creation, his work, his. He is the potter. He is the one that's creating. He is the one that's forming. He is the one that's establishing. He is the one that is in charge. And if we don't like it, then we could pull a Pharaoh. That's all we have to. Pull a Pharaoh. Get it over with. Right? We could bicker about words. We could bicker about thoughts. We could bicker about this, the first plague, second plague, third plague, fourth, all the way down to the death one. We could bicker and bicker and bicker and have our assumption of beliefs. But what is it all about? A promise. The covenant he made with Abraham on God's time list, not ours. And when he separates on his time cycle, not ours. When he alters the events of time or events, it's because he is altering them. I wouldn't say he's altering them. He's enforcing them on his conditions, on his thoughts, on his command, on his issue. We have to say, man, God, did you really create evil? Yeah, really. Now we talk about this tree of knowledge of good and evil. You know what that word means in Hebrew? Good and bad. Not evil. God said in the prophets, I have brought forth evil against Israel. And that word doesn't mean evil. Translate, I brought bad things against Israel. What did he say in the very beginning? Now man knows the knowledge of what is good and what is bad. And what did the Messiah say? Make the tree good. Guess what? You have knowledge that is bad. Which one of you, especially adults, do not know what bad is? What's great? Then you must have knowledge of what is good, but have no idea what bad is. No, you have to run your life and control your life, make sure you're in discipline with it, and you yourself don't have that internal strength. It comes from the power of the Creator of heaven and earth, who has sanctified you with His Spirit to call you out. I know we want to say, call me now. He says, now I'm going to call you out of this world when I am going to call you out in this world. Until then, just go back in the grave and turn to dirt and I'll get you later. There's no resurrection the minute you're dead. The resurrection comes at God's time cycle, His thoughts, His actions, His deeds, and nobody else's. We can't make God do it faster. We can't make God go slower. We can't make God change His mind. We can't make God alter His creation, how He creates things. We can't make God change how to form life. We can't make God change His form of killing people, like the big flood, El Shaddai. Now, we have a picture, perhaps in our mind, because we've been told that, that everybody before, when Noah, God called out Noah and his family, that everybody in the entire world was rotten, polluted, corrupt, evil, beyond imagination. Because we can't picture God killing, quote, an innocent person. Really. He killed his son. He's very innocent. He killed his son. Who's more innocent? No, he didn't. Our sins killed him. No. God says, I'm going to kill my son. What do you do that for? Because I love my creation so much. It's very dear to me. And the creation I love the most is the people that I have formed after my likeness, after what I am like. I want them to be where I am at. I killed my son because I want you. Is that good enough? Have you thought about it that way? No, I've said this before, but you know, we can make discussions about all these plagues. And sometimes we forget what the first commandment really says. I am the one who brought you out of the house of bondage. How did God, in your world, bring you out from a house of bondage? Because I wasn't in bondage. I'm the son of Abraham. Really? I'm Ephraimite. Really? I'm a Jew. Really? Did that free you? Just because you're the seed of Abraham, flesh, does that mean he didn't have to deliver you? I don't know. You know, I hope you understand what I'm saying. I get off on a tangent here, but I see a picture entirely different than the people and the plagues of Egypt and even the Exodus itself. Not that great of a picture. It's the other picture that was told to Abraham, that was told to Isaac, that was told to Jacob. No one else. Just those three.